You're listening to the Real Witches of the End Times, transmissions straight from the underworld. Doom witches, blood wizards, underworld accountants, and cloud people. Welcome back to the Real Witches of the End Times podcast. It's been a minute, and it will probably be another minute after this one as well, if I'm honest. But, you know, every now and then I come back on here with a new episode that I hope you all enjoy. This week, I am very fortunate to be joined with UFC Jake Gyllenhaal himself.
Hello.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy Roadhouse remake schedule to be here. And
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it is. It's a hectic schedule pretending to punch people or maybe actually punching people. I'm not really sure. You watched that and I did not. I simply assumed the mantle of UFC Jake Gyllenhaal and I really know nothing about him. So
it was an alarming experience for those listening who are probably confused. There was a brief moment in time. I thought this was going to become more of a viral thing than it was. So this is probably going to be confusing. I was scrolling on Instagram and was met with a UFC fight video of Jake Gyllenhaal. And, you know, my brain, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, is this, that's not Jake Gyllenhaal. This is just some like guy who looks like Jake Gyllenhaal. It was not. It was literally him in the middle of a UFC fight. This scene is just, they just decide, you know what, we're going to get a permit and we're going to shoot a movie scene in the middle of a real UFC situation. And it was just so unnerving to me. I was like, what? It felt like a rare cryptid that I didn't want to see.
He looks like a rare cryptid in that footage. I mean, I didn't see the whole thing, obviously, because who am I? I don't watch UFC fights. Not even for boys. Not even for boys will I watch a UFC fight. You were telling me about it, and so I Googled it. And he looks terrifying. Like people on Twitter are like, oh my God, Jake Gyllenhaal got so ripped. He's hot. I'm like, he looks like a grandpa, like an angry, ripped grandpa.
You know, when I was a teenager, I definitely thought Jake Gyllenhaal was like a very attractive guy. And I'm not shitting on him now. That's not the point of this. What I'm saying is like, as an adult, he is just a scary person.
Are you saying that this is not Real Witches of the End Times and also a podcast where we exclusively rip on Jake Gyllenhaal? Because that's the pretext under which I agreed to this.
So. Yeah, this is a different show, but I had to say it because Celeste here in the recording chat room put their name as Jake Gyllenhaal, so I had to be honest with who my guest was.
We can probably transition this Jake Gyllenhaal discussion gently into the theme of the episode because he was in Donnie Darko, which is the Jake Gyllenhaal I prefer, let's be clear. And you know, Donnie Darko, Jake Gyllenhaal, there's a whole alternate reality time travel dream vibe to that movie. So, you know, it's an entryway into the discussion.
Because this is actually a discussion about dreams with, surprise, it's actually Celeste Mott. It's not Jake Gyllenhaal.
So. Sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone had that idea already.
Yeah, the Boston accent probably made it clear that it was not Jake Gyllenhaal. Right, the being a woman of it all, perhaps. Also that. But yes, no, it is I, Celeste. I am back. What is this, my third time on your podcast?
This is time number three on the main podcast, and back when I had Patreon, I think you were on there as well. I am beginning to forget things that happened a year and a half or more ago.
Yes, I think that's right. I think we did do bonus Patreon stuff at some point. And we don't, you know, because we did the Nathan Isaac bonus stuff on Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did.
I've been around, is the point. I'm here again. Hello.
Celeste did point out that her watch told her that this was actually like almost to the day 2 years since we first ever met or talked.
Yeah. Yeah. We first ever met or talked kind of on Mana's podcast. We were peripherally aware of each other and Mana said, come on my podcast. And I said, I am deeply flattered because you're very cool and have a very cool podcast. And then we were friends. Yay. And now we're really good friends. Yay.
Despite popular belief, we are not dating.
No,
by the way,
that's true. I'm sorry. And yeah, I mean, I'm actually very sad about that, because imagine if you were dating UFC Jake Gyllenhaal. And also, I'm just sad about it. Really, it sounds weird. I mean, now I don't know how to correct what I just said. I mean, in a way, I am really sad. My life would be a lot easier if I was just dating you, to be honest. Oh, we're off to a good start.
Anyways, the reason that I asked Celeste to come on to speak about dreams is because Celeste is going to be putting out a dreams class soon, a pre-recorded dreams class that will be available online. It's not specifically a time or a date where you have to go and be present for a lecture. It's going to be recorded. You'll be able to access it. And also, just from being in my life and talking to Celeste and having my own dream experiences, you're one of the few people that I feel like has helpful information. Like through speaking with you, I've gotten a lot closer to being able to start lucid dreaming. I've had all sorts of strange experiences where we have odd things happen at similar times. We've been able to talk about things in a way that's building, you know, your own idea of what dream symbolism means to us individually. And it's just been a lot more insightful of an experience. And also, you're just one of the people that you'll just ask for answers, and then the next day in the dream will receive them. And that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating to me too, to be honest. Fascinating and a little bit unsettling sometimes. But obviously, you know, this is what I want to share with others, is techniques that I have, you know, some techniques that I've learned over time from, you know, reading books and talking to other people and so on, but also some that I just developed on my own to help, I guess, let's use gym metaphors. Why not? That's also the, you know, UFC Jake Gyllenhaal and the gym is like all you and I talk about anymore. So, but yeah, to use a gym metaphor, you know, that's the muscle group that I'm interested in helping other people like develop, right? Is like we all do dream. There is a pervasive myth that some people do not dream, but science tells us that everybody does. Whether or not you remember it or not, that's another matter entirely. But it is something we all do, and it is a muscle that you can develop and work and build over time, I think, to do some really, really cool stuff. And particularly if you're already a magical practitioner, you're already spiritual, and that's something that you're already exploring in other ways. The dream space, I think, is just very underutilized, even among people who consider themselves pretty proficient spiritual practitioners, magicians, spiritual workers. It just seems to be something people are interested in, but not sort of making a concerted effort to develop. And I find that to be strange. So I'd been thinking about making a kind of short class for a while. I actually did sort of a prototype of this class on my Patreon last year. And I thought, you know, like, let's just get it done. Let's just make a little sort of bite-sized, so I guess I would call it an introduction class. Like, that is the intent, that it's introductory. It's going to be suitable for beginners, but it's going to have some nuggets in there for people who already dream vividly, for people who are already, you know, a couple of steps ahead on that process. There's going to be stuff in there for everyone. But it's designed as sort of a bite-sized chunk. And hopefully, if it goes well down the track, I might do like a longer course that will be sort of multiple weeks. But this is the first rung on the ladder.
Just from the people that I've spoken with, it is a topic that a lot of people are interested in, because it's something that you hear a lot thrown around as something that you can use, or, oh, like, your dreams are going to give you the answers or tell you things, or you're a good dreamer. I've even told some people that when it's come up in readings before, when it's really obvious. But then obviously the next step is like, if they don't feel connected, then what are they going to do about it? I can only tell them what I see. I can't necessarily help them with something that's not my wheelhouse, because dreaming is not my wheelhouse.
And I think you're right. You know, you see this a lot, much like the advice to like meditate, right? Like, that's advice that I find myself giving clients all the time. Like, oh, you're struggling with something, or you want to like develop this, you want to develop that. Well, you should meditate. And it's all well and good to give people that advice. Like, look for the answer in your dreams, or like focus on your dreams, or meditate. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people then do have the question, like, how? And to harken back to what I was saying earlier, you know, it is very common that a lot of people either permanently or on and off have trouble recalling their dreams. You know, just, you know, that's something that people say to me a lot when I'm like, oh, well, you know, focus on your dream life, take a look at, you know, pay attention to your dreams. And very frequently people will say to me, well, I don't ever remember my dreams. Like, I don't know what's going on in there. And so that's definitely something that we're going to cover in this class, is, you know, like, okay, well, how can you if you are struggling, how can you take steps to improve your relationship with your sleep and your dreaming so that you are recalling what's going on in there? That's, of course, step one. And then from there, we're going to focus on, you know, a little bit about lucidity, which, of course, everyone's always really excited about. How can I get lucid? How can I take a little bit more control over the dream space? We're going to talk about what you do when you do remember your dreams. You know, okay, great. You've learned how to get better dream recall. And now you're having all these wacky, crazy dreams about all sorts of things. Maybe about UFC Jake Gyllenhaal. If you're listening to this podcast, maybe he's going to pop up. We don't know. And you're asking yourself, why is he here? What does this mean? And so we're going to talk a little bit about that too. Like, what do we do with the information when we have it? How can we utilize that content and those messages? But also, how can we utilize the space of the dream magically and spiritually?
So what are your thoughts on when people say things like, well, you can't really prove that this means something, or you can't prove that if you have a dream about this person, then that's significant in some way to the other person as well?
I mean, philosophically, my answer to that would be you can't prove anything. Existentially. We just don't know anything at all. You know, epistemologically, we don't know anything at all. That would be my asshole answer. But, you know, my other answer would be, this is not really any less of an asshole answer, actually, but like, what is significance? You know, I mean, the way you phrase that particularly, like, okay, so you have a dream about someone, you can't prove that that's significant to the other person. Well, no, of course you can't. But is it significant to the dreamer? What is it trying to tell the dreamer? I mean, the example of dreaming about a person is a good one, because are you asking the question from the perspective of, you know, a invisible question asker that we don't know?
I was trying to get to the main pushback question about dreams in general of like,
right,
how does one thing mean anything at all when it's so individualized, which is kind of an answer in and of itself, which right. is kind of the answer in my opinion. But I wanted your thoughts on that, because all the time I'll dream about people that I know, and it'll be significant to me. And then sometimes it will feel so clear that it is potentially significant to this other person who's around in my life or things like that. And I'm also asking because I would assume that part was like from my own experience, but there's also, I've heard plenty of stories out there of people having uncomfortable dreams about people that they know that really throw them off balance.
Right.
Or just another example from myself. One time, when I was in college, I had a dream about my boss who like tried to attack me and really hurt me in the dream, to the point where I woke up the next morning and texted him that I would not be coming into work that day. To this day, I've always wondered, what were his true intentions toward me? I don't know.
Right. And what would have happened if you had gone to work that day? You know, was that literal? Was it a metaphor that was just like your boss was representative in that dream of the job itself? And were you going to go to work and like, I don't know, was a ladder going to fall on your head? Like, we don't know. Like, we don't know. But I think like the question of significance, is it significant? Because it sounds like kind of what you're asking is, how do we know that it means anything? And that it's not just like your brain being like, burr, 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 you know, like robot noises. And I think the thing is, it's a two-pronged answer. One is, when you get really skilled at dreaming and dream recall, you can start to differentiate usually when it is your brain just going boop, 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 and when something else is happening. The quality mm-hmm. of the dream feels different. And it's not really about what is happening in there or who is showing up. Like, I've definitely had dreams about people that are important to me, or people I'm hyperfixated on, that I want to be significant, but I know because of the way the dream feels, way more because of how it feels than the content, really. But I just know because of the texture of the dream and the feeling of the dream, I'm like, okay, that was literally just my brain being like hyperfixated or processing some stuff, processing some anxiety, processing some trauma, beep, 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 robot noises. But sometimes when you train it, when it's a skill that you've trained over time, when it's a muscle that you've built, you can feel the difference between kind of brain hard drive defragging dream and like, oh, this is something, like this is a message of some sort. And I think the question of like significance, like how do you know if it's just significant to you? How do you know if it's significant? Like, let's take your boss, for example, the boss dream. Was this literally a message about your boss? Was this some kind of cord that existed at that moment in your dream between you and your boss, and the universe or whatever you want to call it was trying to give you a heads up that your boss was like a not safe person to be around? Or was your boss standing in for something else, standing in for the job, standing in for, you know, some other part of your life that you still needed to be aware of, but, you know, whatever the message was took the form and the shape of him. You know what I mean? And this happens a lot in dreams. And it's a useful skill to train and to learn how to discern, because you don't, of course, want to be thinking that you've had a dream about your boss and you're interpreting it a certain way when, you know, maybe it's a message that's taking another form. Sometimes people will turn up in your dreams and they will not necessarily be themselves. And I think really good examples of this, here's how I'll explain it. Really good examples of this are celebrities that turn up in your dream. You know, chances are pretty good that if you're having a dream about Kim Kardashian, it's not an indication that Kim Kardashian's going to walk into your life in the next like 3 to 5 weeks and be like, sup, you know? It could happen. I'm not going to totally rule it out, but it's unlikely. So then we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is this person in my dream standing in for? You know, what do they represent to me? Who in my life might they be visually similar to, or like energetically similar to? Is it possible that my brain or the spirit or energy of someone else or something else in my life is like using this person as a stand-in? And an example from my life is that I had this dream, probably, I think it was sometime last year. It was quite a while ago now. And for some reason in the dream, this, a spirit of mine, like a spirit that's important to me in my court, turned up in the dream wearing the face of Steve Irwin's son, Robert Irwin, which was baffling to me because I don't care about Robert Irwin. I mean, I'm sure he's lovely, but I don't spend any kind of time thinking about him. Like, and that was the notable thing about that dream, is that this was not a celebrity or somebody who I watch a lot of content from or who I think about a lot or who I'm paying any kind of attention to. So the fact that it was notable that this person was in my dream in the first place, you know, sometimes we'll have dreams like that where we're like, where did that come from? Like, you know, why was I thinking about this thing or like this, you know, person, or like it makes no sense because you can't think of a conscious way that your brain would have like integrated that. And that was the deal with this Robert Irwin situation. I was like, why is Robert Irwin in my dream? And the whole time in the dream, I knew that he was not Robert Irwin. I was like, oh, this is a spirit. This is like someone that's important to me wearing the face of Robert Irwin. But why? And then I realized, you know, when I woke up, I was like, oh, because there's like this other person in real life that I have been fixating on that I am really into, who is like a Robert Irwin genre of human being. And my spirit was just like, well, let me wear this face because this is like what you're into, right? Like you're into like this genre of human being. So I guess when it comes to like dreaming about people, that's something you have to ask yourself. Is the person you're dreaming about celebrity or no? Are they showing up as themselves? If they're showing up as themselves, is that because you are dreaming about them for a reason? You know, are you getting a message for that person? Are you getting a message about that person? Like in the case of your boss, you know, was that a message about how safe it was to be around your boss? Is it possible that the person that you're dreaming about is actually some other entity or energy kind of wearing the face of that person for some reason? Or is it possible that you do have some kind of psychic and energetic link with that person and the two of you are kind of connecting in the dream space? Because that absolutely does happen, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this kind of leads into another topic as well, just the concept of telepathy in dreams. Mm-hmm. Because through that point, if it is an established connection, I feel like there are people out there who have no gauge on spiritual terminology whatsoever and like, mm-hmm, don't give a shit about any of this, who have had these types of experiences where you've been in a relationship with someone, had a close friendship, even a family member, someone you hate even, but the hate comes from more of like a frustrated relationship or things like that, where you dream about these people a lot, you think about them, they text you, or just the very, very, very classic example of thinking about someone and then the phone rings and it's them, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. those types of things. That comes up in dreams as well. And that type of dream, those telepathy dreams, I have spoken with Keith and Allie about recently. It'll be recently in the podcast feed, but really it was like a year ago at this point. If people remember that, we're talking about Elsewhere dreams, where these dreams that have just like a different feel to them that you learn to recognize, which is what you just touched on as well. Mm-hmm. But telepathy in dreams, I think, is something that you can't really just teach someone how to tell. It's something that you learn over time.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the same way as you can't tell someone what working out a muscle feels like, you know, you can kind of point to where in the body you're going to feel it, and you can kind of give people a general guideline, but you can't describe exactly how that's going to feel in somebody else's body. And I think it's the same way for this kind of thing. You can point people to how an Elsewhere dream, if we use Keith and Allie's terminology, which I love, so let's use it, but you can teach them or explain to them how the quality might feel different, but you can't explain exactly what, how that's going to land, what it's going to look like. And that's the hard thing about teaching this kind of material. You know, it's not like teaching someone how to bake a cake, you know, it is a little bit more, fluid and a little bit more nuanced and individual. And I think that's something that we forget a lot about dreams. And I'm sure we're going to move into this side of the conversation soon, but it's something that drives me absolutely bananas about the industry that sprung up around dreams and dreaming. This idea that we can boil everything down to like, well, this means this, as if it's like, you know, dream dictionary type stuff, which drives me absolutely bananas, because no, it's not that simple. Like, we are extremely complex individual human beings with vast, nuanced complexities of experience, and you can't say, you know, I dreamed about a leak and it means this, and it's leaks mean the same thing to everyone else. I mean, obviously you and I, Manna, have a very specific connection to the leak, and what mm-hmm. leaks mean to us are
it's
not
the best Valium there is.
I know. And what leaks mean to us is not going to be what leaks mean to, you know, somebody else, you know, that we might speak to. That was an odd example to use, but you know, you see people saying like, I don't know, right now I've got cardinals outside my window, right? I have these two mated pair cardinals that have taken up residence in the tree outside my kitchen window, and they are, the lady cardinal is forever like throwing herself against the window because she can see her own reflection and she wants to murder the thing that she thinks is the other cardinal. She's like, back off, bitch, and she's like throwing down every morning. So I wake up every morning, just this slamming sound. It goes on for roughly 2 to 4 hours. Anyway, that's besides the point, but I'm gonna have to do something about that cardinal. She's gonna kill herself. But anyway, cardinals, according to the internet, because of course I immediately go to Google and I'm like, what is the significance of cardinals? And you know, there's this whole, based in folklore, based in received wisdom, old wives' tales, stuff like that, mythology, like there is this meaning around the cardinal as a bird. And it's interesting because it kind of varies. Like, if you subscribe to sort of a Christian worldview, then Christians will say like cardinals are messengers of God. And if you kind of go down the more folksy, pagan-ish side of things, pagans are like, it means someone you love is gonna die. Like, it's like quite different depending who you ask. Either it's God saying hello, or it's God saying hello, I'm gonna kill your family. Like, it's, you know, like one or the other. Either way, you know, I think that's a great example, because you see a lot of that kind of thing with dream symbolism. You see these dream dictionaries that are like, oh, if you ever dream about, God, I can't even think of an example, but like, you know, water, then it means like this specific thing. And I just think that's a load of horse shit, honestly. That's not to dismiss folklore, and that's not to dismiss the collective consciousness, which of course, or the collective unconsciousness, I should say, because of course that's a real thing. Jungian analysis, all of that kind of stuff. But I would say that we have a collective interpretation of certain symbols and certain ideas based on culture, based on how we were raised, based on mythology and folklore. But I think we also have an extremely highly individualized relationship to most of the symbols that come up in our dreams. And again, like what water in a dream means to me is not going to be what water in a dream means to you. You and I specifically have very different feelings about water.
Yeah, it's true. And tuna sandwiches.
Yeah, I hate a tuna sandwich. You know, if I have a dream about a tuna sandwich, that probably means that God is coming to kill someone I love. But that's probably what it means for me, you know?
To me, it means I'm going to eat good tonight.
Quite different. I hate a tuna sandwich and also the ocean. Both of those things. But yeah, so I mean, I think we got a little twisty-turny there, but that's part of the reason that I think it's important to teach people these skills is to give them a framework on which to understand what they're dreaming about. Because I think I'm not gonna say dream dictionaries are totally completely useless. Again, I think it is good to have a sense of what a symbol or an image might mean in a kind of larger cultural context. But I think it's also important to develop your own lexicon for what your dreams are trying to tell you specifically.
And I think that kind of goes with most forms of divination, because I think isn't dreaming like onryo, something oniriomancy?
Yeah, oniriomancy. Mm-hmm.
Did I say it wrong? How do you say
it? No, I think you said it right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a form of divination. And much like other methods such as tarot, you're going to have the collective understanding of what cards mean. And then you're going to have your own experiences with the cards that you've gathered over time, which is what ultimately makes people good readers, is when they have that and they're not just opening the book anymore, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that's where your kind of intuition comes in as well. And I think intuition is a big part of discerning the difference between a dream with like a capital D, like a dream that's trying to tell you something, vs like, oh yeah, that's really just my brain doing its thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever I have more of like an anxiety dream or something that's more chaos, it just seems like the antennas flapping around from one station to the next, like on a radio station. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much uncontrollable mayhem that when I wake up, I'm like, okay, not even going to deal with that, because that was just brain sorting into things. But
totally,
there are those times when I'll wake up and I'm just like, whoa, that was a movie, literally, that I just watched that I am now deeply affected by.
Mm-hmm.
One of those times, similar to the time of the boss dream, was I had a dream where I was being chased by something and I was not fast enough and it got me. Mm-hmm. But in the dream, I was already having the thoughts of like, if only I had trained and was able to run faster, I would have been able to get away. So I woke up that next morning, put on running shoes, and went running for the first time in probably a year, just out in the neighborhood. Cause I was like, I'm not going to get fucking killed by whatever that thing was.
Mm-hmm. And like, who knows? Again, was that a message for you in order to motivate you to like get stronger, get faster for some totally unrelated reason, you know? But like, was that the motivation and the push that you needed in that time? And I think that's when you sort of start introducing like the fact that dreams, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of occultists and a lot of spiritual workers, you know, a lot of spiritual people, like they really can be messages, not just from your own subconscious, but from the external, you know, whether you want to call that God, whether you want to call that spirits, whether you want to call, you know, whatever you want to call it, the universe, like it is a method of communication. It's as I take great satisfaction into telling certain people, it's in the Bible, for heaven's sake. Like, have none of you seen Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat? It's a whole ass musical, as well as being in the Bible. I mean, there's like precedent for people receiving messages in dreams in sacred texts for millennia. You know, like it's one of the oldest forms of spirit contact that we see in all these sacred texts, in all these folkloric practices. Like it really has been, it's this unbroken cord, you know, of the sacred and the spiritual imbued in our kind of day-to-day lives, because most of us have dreams and remember our dreams, you know, at least multiple times a week. I would say it's fairly uncommon that I encounter someone who's like, oh no, I never dream. Like it does happen, but it's rare. So, I mean, how crazy is that for all of human history? Ever since, like, the first person's brain developed sufficiently, we've all been having these nightly hallucinations. And since that time, people have been interpreting them as messages from some kind of divine source, some kind of external source.
Mm-hmm. And if you train it well enough, it can become a warning system if you have enemies afoot.
Oh my God, 100%. Yes. 100%. Which again, like, to people who don't do this, perhaps, or to people who don't train it, perhaps sounds insane. But more times than I can count, I've had a dream that has given me a heads up that, you know, something is afoot. And sometimes the thing that is afoot is very mundane. You know, I mean, to use a really normie example, I've definitely had dreams that gave me a heads up that people were not being honest with me, or that people were going to betray me in some way, in really mundane, boring ways, you know, in like relationship ways, right? But I've also had dreams that gave me a heads up that I was like under spiritual attack or like under magical attack. And every so often I'll still, like, it's like you said, it's like a little alarm system. You'll get a little alarm. The alarm will go off and you'll be like, okay, got to take care of some stuff because, you know, I got this heads up in my dream. But I think, you know, that introduces another important part of all of this, which is you can drive yourself a little bit crazy with this undertaking, with all of this stuff. So it is also important to have that system of checks and balances in place so that you're not every single time you have an anxiety dream or every single time you know, I mean, I guess, you know, here's a good normie example, kind of from my own life, but I think it's probably common to a lot of people. Anyone who has an anxious attachment style, anyone who has trauma, like, most of us have had a dream at some point that, like, our boyfriend, girlfriend, partner is cheating on us. You don't want to drive yourself insane with that and assume that every time you're having that dream, it's like a message from the universe that it's actually happening. And so that's when you also have to sort of learn how to discern, does this dream have the quality of something that really is a heads up? Is this just anxiety? And you need to learn processes to divine on your dreams, you know, do additional divinatory steps to make sure that what you're dreaming is actually something, not just noise. You know, you have to be responsible about it as well, I guess is what I'm saying. Responsible about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's absolutely a difference between taking a warning. Like, I would say even this with, like, divination, with tarot as well. If I pull cards on the character of a person, or if I have a dream about someone, it's something to consider, but it's not like, it's like taking a lie detector test to court. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, it's not fully admissible evidence, but it's something to consider. It's not, you know, it's, if it is backed up by other things, other events, things that you've already observed, dreams are the subconscious. So sometimes those dreams you have about someone being sketchy, your body and mind have been picking up things, even if you haven't been consciously digesting them for
Absolutely.
A very long time.
Absolutely.
Around people.
Yeah.
So that's another explanation for some things. And then you have a dream about someone being shitty to you, and then a day later they do something awful. It's not hogwash to think that there's significance to things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think you make a really good point about your body and parts of your brain registering things that you're not always consciously aware of. And I think this is particularly true when it comes to other people, right? Because our conscious brains, first of all, they protect us by shutting down a lot of extraneous information. The conscious brain is like, I'm going to focus on what I can control, and I'm going to shut down all these little subtle nuances and, you know, sometimes shut down what might be like subtle red flags, because I have to exist and I have to keep doing things. And if I was paranoid all the time, I would not function. So there's that. But there's also the fact that we, our conscious brains want certain narratives to be true. If you've made a new friend or you're dating someone new or whatever it is, like, you don't want to believe that this person is a shitbag, right? Like, that's not something that your conscious brain, like, wants to believe. And so you'll tune out and you'll shut out these little subtle signs that maybe something is off. And I think your dreams are absolutely a way that that stuff can like pop back to the surface again. It's like your brain saying, hey, all the stuff you were ignoring while you were awake and like moving around in the world and like interacting with this person, you're asleep now, bitch. And so I'm going to remind you of all of this stuff that we were still filing away. And yeah, I mean, I think this is also the value of making sure that you do write down your dreams and you do keep track of what you're dreaming, even if it seems really inconsequential, even if it seems like a little bit nutty or a little bit silly, because you can then go back and you can see how your dreams are informing the things that happen in day-to-day life. You know, people sometimes tell me, they're like, oh, you know, I have dreams about things that then like happen in the future. And isn't that crazy? And like, it is, it's cool. Actually, it's not crazy. It's like cool as hell. But it's also like not as uncommon as people think that it is. Like the precognitive dreaming is surprisingly common. And again, that is a skill that can be trained. And it can benefit you massively, you know, like hugely.
And I would think too, in addition to being able to train it for it to happen, I also think as you notice and are able to validate to yourself with evidence of like having a dream journal that you have actually predicted something or something, there's as uncanny symbolism previously in a dream, which is why I keep my dream journal in my notes on my phone so I can search words.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Some people like different ways. That's just what I prefer. But I find that as I've done that and as I've gotten more noticeable of like, oh no, I did think this would happen before, or I did have evidence this would happen, I'm now noticing it more often as opposed to maybe even happening. I'm just noticing it more in general, and it may have been happening my whole life. Who knows? But that's something that has definitely been significant. And there was actually a time in my life where for about maybe 6-7 months or so, I had a significant connection with someone. And I, during this time period, would put my phone on airplane mode when I would sleep. This was just one of those weird trend things that I was trying at the time. Because I am someone who, if I don't set a phone alarm, even on the weekend, I'll wake up at like 1 p.m. Or something like that, so I have to set an alarm every day. So my phone was on my nightstand, but I was paranoid about telepathy, phone waves messing up my brain, which is real. That's not the thing that happens. So I would put it on airplane mode. And all the time, I have at least like 5 or 6 times that I can think of right now off the top of my head that this happened, where my dream field of vision would be a phone screen. So I would see, just with my eyes shut, it was like I was looking at a shared screen on Zoom of my text messages, and I would get a text message from this person saying a message like, hey, how are you? Or like, they're asking me something. And then enough times where it weirded me out, would I wake up, and then taking my phone off airplane mode, which eliminates the possibility that I woke up, saw the text already and forgot. Then after a couple of beats, the text will come through and it will be something of the sort from that person. And this was not a person that I was like you, Celeste, who I've talked to all the time. And of course I might wake up. It's not weird to wake up to a text from someone.
Right. This was someone that was not like that. A sporadic enough connection that like it was not an everyday occurrence that you would get a text from this person.
And it was just it was very weird, because it was as if my brain was picking up whatever radio waves my phone was unable to pick up, and it was just getting downloaded into my head instead. Obviously that's not a scientific evidence thing, but that's what it felt like, because that still happens from time to time with other people. But for that period of time when I was doing that with my phone, it was like I was getting a text and they were like, what the fuck did we put this? Just in her head. We'll just put it in her head.
Oh my God. I want to try this now as an exercise. I think everybody who's listening to this podcast should try that as an exercise. Put your phone in airplane mode when you go to sleep and see if you're having dreams about getting texts. I think that's a really fun one to experiment with.
I would be really interested in. I will give the caveat that this is a person that I had an extreme telepathic connection but if someone does do this and it even happens once, we do want to hear about it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So no, I wanted to talk to you about the idea of psychic connection and, you know, energetic cord and how that can manifest in the dream space, because you're telling your story about, you know, this person that you had this connection with, and it was a very strong psychic connection, and you know it played out in the dream by you getting airplane mode an airplane mode dream texts, which I just think is amazing. You know, that's a real thing. And the story I was going to tell you, this happens to me very frequently throughout the course of my life. It's quite weird. But sometimes I'll just meet someone, and even if I just meet them very briefly, this happened with my ex, actually. I met them for the very first time and spoke, you know, a handful of words to them. And I just knew, like, deep in my gut, I was like, ah, fuck. Like, I was like, this is a thing. Like, this is just going to be a thing. I don't know what kind of thing it's going to be, but it's going to be a thing. And that typically just happens to me. And I've heard other people, like, I think you're the same way. Like, sometimes, yeah, those of us who are sensitive, those of us who are kind of psychic, and I'm sure many people listen to this podcast, because when I say psychic or sensitive, I'm not suggesting that that's like a tiny exclusive group. I think a lot of people fall into that category. And sometimes that's just the way. You meet someone, you connect with someone, you have a conversation with someone, and you just know, like, oh, crap, like, this is something. And for me, it just hits on an energetic level. It doesn't necessarily mean that I, like, I'm in love with this person, or like, I want to be in a relationship with this person, but I'm just like, ah, damn it. Something's here. And for me, that always, almost always, is kind of borne out or confirmed through dream. And in the case of this person that I'm about to talk to you about, who is not my ex, I connected with this person. And literally the first night that I ever spoke to this person, I went to sleep that night and I was like, I'm going to dream about this person. And I did. Like, that literally the first night that I ever spoken to them, I had a dream about them. And that's pretty unusual for me. I think, you know, it's not so unusual if you get really interested in someone or really hyperfixated on someone, or, you know, like, this is true of anything. You get really hyperfixated on a hobby. You get really hyperfixated on a TV show. You get really hyperfixated on a person. Of course, the things that you're thinking about a lot or obsessively are going to pop up in your dreams. But it's pretty unusual for me to, like, meet someone for the first time and for them to, like, boop, immediately show up in the dream space. So that instantly was like an indication for me. I was like, pay attention. And, you know, since that point in time, I've had a ton of dreams about this person. And almost every dream has been a heads up of something that will later happen. Not necessarily like word for word, like blow for blow, you know, but my dreams have been constantly trying to give me additional information on a situation that has been very confusing. The dreams have been kind of filling things in for me. And this is one of the ways that I think it can be helpful for people to learn how to do this, learn how to remember, learn how to process, learn how to interpret, because there's a lot that happens in our conscious day-to-day lives that is confusing and is hurtful and is difficult to parse and difficult to understand. There are traumatic things that happen. There are, you know, stressful things that happen. There are things that we can't really wrap our heads around in a fully conscious way. And I think sometimes the dream space, you know, it will give us room and space to process this stuff and to figure it out and to make sense of it. And of course, you know, you have to figure out, as we said before, how much weight to give that. Where to put it. You don't want to be making like blanket assumptions about people and things just based on something that you had a dream about, you know? But I think it can help us to sometimes find closure. It can help us to heal things that we're having difficulty healing. And it can certainly help us to understand or sort of work through a psychic connection that we might have with somebody. I mean, in your case, with the kind of phone screen dream, or I guess like if you feel comfortable, like any psychic connection dream you've had, have you ever felt like that's been confirmed by the other person?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's absolutely been the case. I've had people tell me, completely unknowing that I'm having these dreams, they'll be like, yeah, I had this weird dream about you, mm-hmm. where you did XYZ, which to them is nonsense, but to me is something significant to myself. Like, there being specific plans present, or me just doing an activity that like seems bananas to like a regular person, but it's just something I do normally, you know? I've had, even in terms of closure and things, there was a time where I had an absolutely turbulent, not even relationship with someone who I genuinely think had some serious problems. But for some reason, I was very interested in them liking me and wanting more from me than they actually did. And to the point where it became like a very large, significant wound, even though this person was arguably extremely dangerous. And then about a year later, I just had this dream where they came up to me in the bleachers. For some reason, I was watching like a basketball game. I don't know. That was a little bit of my regular subconscious being like, you like basketball. Let's
here you go. Yeah.
Let's put you here. When they came up to me and they just said like, I'm so sorry. Like, I deeply apologize for what I did. It was like a long apology and everything. Yeah. And then I woke up and I felt, I'm not kidding, complete resolution from that entire scenario. That while in that case specifically, someone hadn't come up to me and said like those actual words, I just knew. I was like, no, they've self-reflected now. And I don't think I would feel that way if there wasn't a little bit something more to it. But again, whether or not there is, the end result's the same.
Yeah. And that's, and I think that's the important part, right? Like the situation that I was describing with this person that I started dreaming about, like literally the first time I started talking to them, which is uncommon even for me. I was having a lot of stress and anxiety about a lot of things in my life, sort of several weeks after that first dream, like not even that long after this person had been in my life. And at that point in time, that person wasn't really communicating with me, and I was very confused, and I was very like stressed about it. And, you know, I think tale as old as time, we've all been there, right? We're like, what is happening? I don't know. And I have no way of knowing. And then we make up little songs and we go on a podcast about it and we sing them. But maybe that's just me. But I had this dream around that time that this person and I were hanging out, and that they gave me this letter that like explained what they were going through and what they were feeling and why they were acting the way they were acting. And in the dream, they kind of gave me this letter and they just kind of walked off. And I was like so pissed off with them in the dream. And I was like, I'm not reading this shit. Like, I know what it says. And they were like insistent. They were like, no, you have to read it. Like, it's more complicated than you think that it is. Like, don't just assume that I'm telling you that I don't want to hang out with you in this letter. Like, it's, but you have to read the whole thing. Like, the whole emphasis that in the dream was like, you got to read the whole thing because there's like context in here. And then, of course, the dream became more dreamy, and I tried to read the letter, and I was like, you have the worst handwriting in the world. Like, I can't read this. But that, which happened months ago at this point, has proven to be an absolute predictive precursor for, like, everything that has happened since. You know, that person and I have continued to stay in touch, and some of those things that I was dreaming really early on were absolutely, like, psychic heads up on, like, yo, this is the situation. You know, like, we're going to tell you things that you could not possibly have known that will then turn out to be the case. Now, despite the fact that I'm about to teach this class and I'm telling you all these things on this podcast, did I take my own advice when I had that dream and go, maybe I should take some distance from this human being? No, I did not. But that's because I'm an idiot, not because I'm not psychic. Do as I say. And not as I do. But, you know, I have another like fun dream story. This one's really fun. And I think I've told a couple of people, but I don't think I've ever talked about it like publicly, like on a podcast or anything. But about this time last year, I went to Mount Shasta, California with a bunch of people from my Patreon and my Discord. We went to Mount Shasta as a spiritual retreat together. Five or six of us went to the mountain. If you don't know, Mount Shasta is like kind of notorious for being an incredibly spiritual place. There's supposed to be a lot of UFO activity around there. There's allegedly like a little portal into the mountain where these like higher energetic plane alien beings have a whole society. It's a whole damn thing. But we're not here to talk about Mount Shasta. The point is, we went, it's a spooky mountain. One of the days that we were there, we decided to go for a hike to this place called Pluto's Cave. We drove out into the desert, we're hiking into this cave, and we went into one of the kind of caverns of the cave. We did a little ritual. And on our way out, and we hear this like rhythmic, like tribal drumming, and we can't tell where it's coming from. And when you've just been in a cave in the middle of a really spooky part of California doing a ritual, and then you like come out and you just hear drumming, it's that alone is an experience. So we're walking out through this sort of second cave, like a little antechamber, to try and get back out to the trail so we can get back to the car. And we come upon this couple, these two people, sitting in this other cave in this like beam of sunlight that's coming in through a skylight. And one of them is like tribal drumming and one of them is chanting. And they have like a little altar set up full of like crystal skulls and like crystal pyramids. And almost everyone in our group is very respectful and a bit nervous. So we all kind of just like bow our heads and walk past it, but like, sorry for interrupting, you know. But there's one girl in our group, Jess, who's just like the most beautiful, confident, like outgoing, extroverted soul. And Jess just turns around and she's like, "Can we stay and listen to your drumming?" Which I would never have done. These lovely people were like, "Of course you can." And we sat and we listened to the drumming and it was, you know, very weird and a beautiful time. And when they're done, you know, we are appreciative. We have a brief chat with these people. And one of the people that we're talking to is this dude. He lives in Shasta. He's not there from there originally. Big kind of like older hippie guy. And he's telling us about some sort of hidden hiking trails. And I tell him I really want to find snakes. And he's telling me where you can find snakes. And it's like this really cool conversation. And we all vibe so well that we exchange contact information. I think we just exchange like Instagrams or whatever. Fast forward to the next morning. We all wake up, we're getting ready for our hiking day. And I get a DM from this person. And he's like, "I had a dream about you last night." So similar situation to the one that I just told you about with the person that I met and immediately dreamed about. Like, and I think this guy was similarly nonplussed. He was like, "It's very weird that I dreamed about you last night because I don't usually dream." He was like, I smoke a ton of weed and I, you know, have a history of some other substance use that means that typically I don't dream at all. So he's like, "It's weird that I dreamed at all." He was like, "I definitely never dream really about people I know. And I can't think of a single time I've ever dreamed about someone I've only just met." So he was like, "It feels really important that I tell you about this dream." And I have to tell you that, like, when a strange man that I don't know tells me they had a dream about me, I'm not trying to sound like I'm full of myself, but I think most of us are like, like, what am I walking into? So I definitely did debate simply not taking his phone call, but something felt significant about it. So I was like, okay, sure, like, let's talk. He calls me on the phone and he explains this dream. And he basically tells me, you know, the Cliff Notes version of the dream is he was like, "Oh, you know, you and I were on sort of different opposing kind of, we were in like opposing clans or like opposing factions. We were like on different teams. And my people had been sent to like hunt your people down. And we were like breaking into this area that you were in. And you were my target. You were the person that I was assigned to like hunt down and capture, basically." And he was like, "In the dream, I found you and I grabbed your wrist and immediately I touched you and I looked into your eyes. I was like, oh God, I can't hurt her. Like, I have a connection with this person. I can't hurt her." And then he was like, "The rest of the dream is me trying to help you escape. And I helped you get out of like harm's way. But then my people, my like crew realized that we were gone and they were pursuing us. And there was a certain point where I realized that both of us weren't going to be able to get away. So I said that you should just go and you should escape. And I sacrificed myself for you so that you could be safe and get away." So first of all, that's an intense dream to have about someone that you met for 20 minutes in a cave. Number one, mm-hmm. Bit weird. Secondly, this, like, I was floored because for the 8 or 9 months prior to going to Shasta, I had been having recurring dreams about these people that I had just been calling the intergalactic cops trying to catch me. Like, it was a pervasive recurring dream scenario. And so this fucking weird hippie guy from Mount Shasta, California meets me one time and tells me about this dream. And I'm just like, oh boy, you know, like, what is happening in the elsewhere right now? And, you know, he and I had a little bit of a further conversation about it. And I told him that information and I shared a little bit more about like what was going on with me and my life. And his interpretation was that we had some kind of really important cord and that we had kind of met each other because we were supposed to help each other, which very well may be true. But I have to tell you that I have like literally had no contact with that person since then. Like, we don't talk. We haven't touched down. he is occasionally on my mind because that is one of the weirder things that's ever happened to me. So I definitely think about this person from time to time. But I think that's another example of like how a psychic cord can operate. Like, what is the connection there? I don't know. You know, like, I thought this guy's going to tell me he had some weird sex dream about me, which did not happen. And instead, he tells me this very significant spiritual thing. And, you know, clearly we do. I mean, I am prepared to say publicly on a podcast, me and this man obviously do have some kind of very intense, like, spiritual, energetic, psychic connection. I don't know what it is. Maybe I will never know what it is. But there's no way that someone who met me for 20 minutes and we had an innocuous conversation about hiking trails could possibly have known any of those things about me. And he picked up on it. So, you know, these are the mysteries that unravel themselves in the dream space. And I am constantly fascinated by that. And I think it's way more common for people to have experiences like that than we realize it is. You know, I had a client the other day, you know, and I'm obviously not going to give any identifying information about her away, but like, not an occultist, not a sorcerer, not a magician, like a person with a normal job, with kids, with a family, like a normal person. And she came to me because part of what she wanted to talk about was this incredibly vivid, psychically potent, energetic dream life that she had. And she told me during our session, she was like, I've told maybe 3 people in my life that this happens to me because I sound crazy. And the thing of it is, you're not crazy. Like, if you're listening to this podcast and any of the stories that Mana or I have told resonate for you and you're like, oh my God, that's happened to me. Like, you're not crazy. You're not going insane. You know, may other people in your life think that you're going insane if you told them these stories? Maybe. But that's why people like Mana and I exist. And that's why I'm making this class, because you're not crazy. It is real as much as anything is real. And I think you can learn how to harness and use and manipulate and, you know, benefit from these things.
I just for everyone's listening, I've heard the story that Celeste just told before, so I'm not ignoring the phenomenal tale that was just told. And again, I'm not like Celeste. I'm not a person who has dreams constantly. I tend to go through dreaming periods. I think a lot of people are like that. I think astrology, transits, all that stuff are all going to play into a part as well.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even if you are a very potent, powerful dreamer, I think that's still the case. I definitely find myself going through seasons. And so maybe that's another good thing to mention for people who are listening and like wondering, like, oh, you know, like sometimes I feel like things are really popping off and then it gets really quiet. Like, I think it is that way, even for people who are very strong dreamers. And it is worthwhile to not panic if you're going through a quiet time. You know, I think sometimes, like you said, astrological transits, things like that can impact it, I would imagine. But I think sometimes it's also your own energy body, your own guides, your own spirits, your own brain just kind of protecting itself. You know, you can't be psychically linked to the universe 24/7. Otherwise, you would be very tired and maybe lose your mind a little bit. You know, sometimes you just need some downtime. And that, you know, makes me think of last night's a good example. Like, I've had a lot going on in my personal life recently since the beginning of the year. And whenever things are really chaotic and hard for me, like, the dream is the comfort space as well. Like, if things are vibrant and busy and bright in the dream space, you know, I've definitely had times where I'll have an elsewhere dream and I'll wake up to the chaos of my life and be like, wow, everything sucks. But at least I got that though. You know, at least I did this cool shit in my dream, you know? And so when I don't have that, it can be very destabilizing and very disheartening and make life harder. But last night is a good example. I have had a lot going on and I went to sleep sort of intending to hopefully have some meaningful dreams and to, if not meaningful, at least have sort of an elsewhere visit with some of my like spirits and maybe just get some like fun, good, happy time into the dream space. And I woke up and remembered literally nothing. I know I had a ton of dreams. Do I remember them? No. So I guess it's worth saying this because even with the class that I'm teaching, I would argue any class, any book, anything anyone's going to teach you, it's not 100% foolproof. You're not going to be able to train yourself to have 100% dream recall or to lucid dream literally every night of your life, you know? And I think some of it is protective brain stuff. It's your brain saying, like, you don't need that right now. Like, you know, sometimes you just need to rest, because REM sleep, you know, is not the most restful state of sleep, you know? It's not, you're not really supposed to be dreaming every single hour you're asleep or remembering all of it, you know? So don't fret if you have seasons of quietness and seasons of things being a bit more vivid. It's normal and it's probably healthy. I mean, they say, you know, that there are certain techniques that you can use to aid dream recall, and you're really not supposed to do it every night, because it will fuck up your sleep patterns and it'll make you sick. So everything in moderation, including dreaming. I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll wake up from, particularly from like an elsewhere style dream, like a dream where you really have like gone somewhere else, you know, not just that you've had a psychic dream, but a dream where you literally have like gone somewhere. And sometimes I'll wake up from those dreams, you know, and not feel like I'm in reality. Like I have spent, you know, a day to 2 days like in a bubble where I'm like, which part is the dream? Actually, I'm not sure, you know, like something that I've experienced on that other side has been so vivid and so transformative and so familiar, you know, that I'll wake up and be sad that I'm not there and almost feel like I'm in the wrong place. So again, you know, these are other things. Mm-hmm. And this probably is not something I'll touch on in this particular class that I'm teaching at the end of the month. This will probably be something for like the longer course, but there is, you know, a cautionary tale to be had here of how to manage your life and your experiences when you are someone who dreams that way, because it can be disorienting and it can be kind of heartbreaking when you have what can almost start to feel like a parallel life. I mean, this has been the story of my life since I was a very tiny child, is like, you know, I'll tell people like as a joke, but it's not a joke, but like I have two lives and one of them is taking place while I'm asleep. And there have definitely been times in my life where it has been legitimately heartbreaking that I can't just be there all the time.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot more people will relate to that than the average person may think.
Yeah. And that's a real thing as well. People don't talk about this stuff. And again, even the people that I know of that are teaching about dreams and dreaming and lucid dreaming, you know, I feel like this side of it, the very deeply spiritual side of it, the other side of it, you know, the other world side of it, people don't seem to touch on as much. Probably because it sounds a little crazy and it sounds a little intense. But I think it is more common than many people realize. And I think those of us who experience that need and deserve the tools to be able to cope and manage. And like I said, to be able to sort of utilize what we're being given, because it is a powerful space. I mean, once you learn how to literally do magic in your dreams, like that's the next level mm-hmm. stuff, you mm-hmm. know, like that's the real. And there's entire streams of magic, which some people listening to your podcast will already know about, but there's entire streams of witchcraft specifically that are designed to be practiced in the dream. And like, that's the purpose of it. I'm thinking particularly of like Andrew Chumley's work. It's a big part of that is, you know, you do it in the dream. You don't just do it in the conscious material world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you start popping the cap off that, shit gets really interesting. Mm-hmm.
I've heard many magicians talk about as well how they were taught things in dreams. And one of those people... Mm-hmm. who I think spoke about this on either Spirit Box or Glitch Bottle, was Adam Wachter, who talked about how they learned from spirits specific things that they could do with sorcery. And I've had experiences too where something has been trying to show me how to do something and I'm like, listen, I can't read dream English. I'm trying to read this text and it looks bananas to me. Like I...
You gotta teach me how to read first. Yeah. Listen. Oh my God. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a real thing. And again, like, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will already know that, but if that's new information to some people, I mean, I remember when I first came across that idea, even as someone who has dreamed vividly my whole life and who's someone who's been, you know, on a spiritual path of one sort or another for most of my life, when I first heard that, my mind was blown. And I have to say, I was a little bit skeptical. Like, there was part of me that was like, that sounds crazy. Like, what do you mean a spirit can teach you how to do magic in a dream? That sounds like some young adult novel nonsense, as our good friend Alex Moore would say. YA novel nonsense. But, you know, then it started happening to me. And I realized that it had been happening to me for most of my life, and I had just kind of been ignoring it. Mm-hmm. And you start implementing that stuff and you're like, oh, holy cow, it works. But when you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, spirits are not beings that necessarily have an easy time manifesting in or manipulating the material world. Not to say that they can't, but like, that's not their playing field, really. The dream, spaces that are subtle, spaces that are slight, spaces that are liminal, to use a overused buzzword, like, that's where the spirit is at home. And so it makes perfect sense that if you are a magician or a sorcerer or a witch or someone who is engaging in any way with the spirit world, they're going to feel more comfortable coming to you in that space because it's kind of more similar to their home turf, really. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely had experiences where spirits have shown up to me in that space, taught me things in that space, connected and communicated with me in that space. I think one of the coolest things that happened recently was, again, it's been a kind of hard year. And right after I'd come home from a trip that was very sort of spiritually significant to me and a really important time for me, and I was feeling pretty fucked up though, like in the head. And I went to sleep the night that I got home, first night I was home, and had this crazy vivid dream of all these moths and butterflies, which are very spiritually important to me, in this tree. And they were all like really bright pastel colors, you know, kind of like Atlas moths and stuff like that, but like in these crazy like candy colored, like the Marie Antoinette style, like pastel shades. And I remember in the dream looking at these moths and butterflies, and I was with someone in the dream. I don't even know who it was. It was just like a dream person. And I was like, oh my God, look at all these incredible butterflies. And the person I was with was like, whatever, I don't care about that. And I was like, well, you're an idiot. This is cool as fuck. Anyway, I woke up feeling really energized by that. It felt like I had had contact with spirits that were important to me. And it was kind of like a moment of communion and contact. And then I went out that day to this like art market to meet up with a friend of mine from California. And it was this little like weird little kooky event that they were doing at this little house in the Marigny in New Orleans. This place called the Bywater Museum of Unnatural History was doing like a diorama exhibit. And it was all these local artists that had made these like cute little dioramas. And I'm walking around the diorama exhibit, still kind of feeling a little bit messed up from all the stuff that's going on in my life. And I come across this diorama, and it's the butterflies that I saw in my dream. It's this beautiful, like pastel colored moth, but it's also the Virgin Mary. Like, it was a Virgin Mary figurine with these pastel butterfly wings, but it was like pretty much exactly what I had seen in my dream. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, holy shit. And you know, that's an example, I guess, of like a really cool thing that happened that didn't necessarily have like a firm meaning. Like, it wasn't a warning. It wasn't being taught cool magic. It really just felt like an affirmation for me from, you know, the universe, God, however you want to conceive of it, of like, no, like, you're good, you know, like, you are still connected to yourself, you are still connected to who you are on this deeper spiritual level. Your space, your internal world, your elsewhere, who you are at your core, that hasn't gone away just because you're going through all this hard shit. And let us show you how that internal world can manifest on the outside in the material world. Like, there is a link there. There is a cord, and your internal space and the external material world. They're not separate. This is not, you know, this is not something you need to stress about, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense, but it was very affirming in that moment. It felt like comforting, you know?
And just to clarify, that is what dreamdictionary.com said that meant.
Yeah, I looked it up. I was like, what does pastel butterflies mean? And they said, well, it means your internal and external world are inextricably linked and that you're fine and good.
Jokes aside, that is, I don't think you've told me that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was really crazy. I feel like there was a third part. Oh, the third part of that story, which I guess is like, it's not quite as like, ooh, spooky synchronicity. But the third part of that story was that during that whole art market diorama exhibit, there was also like a raffle to like win certain different prizes, right? Like locally made stuff. And I wanted to win this pair of butterfly cocoon earrings that were up for auction. Oh, sorry, like butterfly wing earrings. And so I bought a couple of raffle tickets, and then they weren't going to draw the raffle for like another like 2 hours or something crazy. It was like a really long time. And me and my then boyfriend didn't want to just stand there for 2 hours. So we like went off and did something else. And they were very explicit. They were like, if you are not here when your number is called, you are not going to win this thing. Like, you literally have to be here when we call the number, or we're going to give it to someone else. So me and my then boyfriend go off and do something else. We're wandering around, and it's getting to be that time, you know. And I'm like, we really have to go back so that we can hear them call the results. Like, I don't want to miss the prize if I win the prize. We walk back, and we literally walk up. I shit you not. We are crossing the street. Immediately, they call my number that I've won, like, the butterfly earrings.
Wow.
Yeah. Very weird. just a weird series of butterfly-related shit. Mm-hmm. Like, if we had been even like 3 seconds later, like I would have missed it. We crossed the road. I had to like run across the road and be like, oh my God, I'm here. Like, yeah, very, very strange. But yeah, and I think that's the beautiful thing about learning your own dream symbols, learning how that intersects with your spirit contact, learning how that intersects with the communication you might be trying to do with the other side or the magic you're trying to do. Like, it can impact the material world. You can learn to make those connections and to kind of to use your language to read the dream language, you know, to learn how to dream read. And it can have this very powerful impact on your day-to-day life. I mean, we didn't even talk about it in this podcast, but I will in the class, you know, the scientific and psychological benefits also of like utilizing your dreams. They've done a ton of research now on how dreams can be used to do things like overcome PTSD in people like war veterans and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's really powerful stuff.
You know, there's absolutely reasons that dreams and the unconscious and water are all associated with each other. And water is a conduit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanna know. Like, I know we're like we've been talking for a while now. What a shock! Not that we don't spend like hours a day on the phone together, but no, I wanted to know. I guess do you have another example of like spirit contact in a dream? I feel like people would be interested in that.
Ooh, well, hold on. Let me pull up frusty old notes. Let's see what we can find here, because the beauty of pre-recording this, if I start reading and I go, "Ooh," I can edit it out. So I label mine as dream, and then I put a date. I did try briefly this strategy of because I'm not a journaler in general. I have a very good friend who loves journaling. She loves to handwrite journals. Genuinely, that is a therapeutic thing for her. I'm not that person because I have some strange problems with my physiological joints and skin and stuff in my hands.
Yes.
So holding a writing utensil for a long period of time my entire life is excruciating. So that is why my dream journal is on my phone. But I also tried this experiment two ways where I would wake up and instead of typing it, I would record it in a voice memo so I could listen back at my leisure. Very bad idea. It is like, it's like, imagine listening to yourself talk. The second you wake up, it's like, and then I fell down a well again. And then And then there was one time I fell asleep with it recording and then fell back to sleep.
Oh my God.
So that was done. And then I tried voice to text for for these, which I will get to a real dream, but I feel like I should share some of these because truly, truly something when I was trying to do that.
I'm so excited, actually. Please do.
Okay. All right, give me a moment here. This isn't 2020. And again, this is voice to text, so there's like no periods, and I'm going to read it as is. I had a dream where I was in a big old antique store, gun safe room or something, and there was a row of what looked like sawed off shotguns. Is my mom was showing me them. And I asked my mom, like, what is that? And she goes,
I'm sorry.
She goes, sorry, now my eyes are burning because I just got like.
Oh, God.
Okay. She goes, oh, this is a Glock. Oh, my God. What do you mean that's a Glock? We cannot have that. Why do we have a Glock? She says it's fine. I ask, what exactly is a Glock? And she tells me it's a sawed-off war gun. I Google this in my dream. Literally in the dream, I pull out Google. I Google this in my dream after my convo with my mom, and it is not true. Apparently, it is a sawed-off handgun. I wake up into my next dream. So this is like dream inception, which maybe we can talk about in a second. I wake up into my next dream where I'm outside and in my parents' backyard with blank and blank, which are two names from my real life. I'm not going to stand here.
Okay.
Blank is next to me. On my left is blank, is sitting on the wall barrier. I tell them about this weird dream I had about Glocks, and they're laughing with me about how bizarre it is. I inform them how a Glock is not a sawed-off worm gun. It is a sawed-off handgun. And then at the end, a tiny baby, parentheses I write. So the fact that this is in parentheses in this a voice of text means I said out loud the word parentheses. Parentheses, fetus looking horse about the size of a puppy, and parentheses, shows up out of nowhere and starts slowly rolling down the hill. I pointed out, quote, whoa, what the fuck, why is there a dead horse rolling down the hill, end quote. But no one else noticed or cared. Then I woke up in real life and realized I had dream inception. I just Googled what is a Glock for real this time, and it is a semi-automatic pistol from Austria.
I think the best part about this is I feel like semi-recently, like in the last couple of months, you and I have had a conversation about Glocks where you felt compelled to tell me the truth about Glocks, probably because you had this dream where you learned some important facts.
I learned important information from this. It inspired me, given the absolute double falsehood that I recognized even in my deep slumber, that a Glock is 100% not a sawed-off war gun or shotgun or handgun.
I'm trying to see if I have any funny ones to share. Sadly, nothing as brilliant as voice to text horse fetus rolling down a hill, unfortunately. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Okay, December 1st, 2021. Giant inflatable Minnie Mouse dream? Question mark? No, no further context.
Just out of curiosity, I'm going to Google something and see if
are
a
you
dream... going to
Google giant inflatable Minnie Mouse?
Google Minnie Mouse... dream meaning. We know your dreams.com. Okay. Dream interpretations of Mickey Mouse. I looked up Minnie Mouse, okay? Dream Encyclopedia. Tell me my dream.com. Minnie Mouse. Okay. Many websites cover this. To dream about Minnie Mouse explained. Something might be pestering you right now. Are you focused on little things in life that are not important? You need to elevate your mind and move forward. If you are afraid of a mouse, suggest you don't think too highly of yourself. If you are feeding a mouse, suggest that you are letting the wrong people take advantage of you. May symbolize feelings or memories connected to childhood.
Oh, boy.
Dreaming about discovering a dead mouse in a place of residence portends an agonizing period of financial instability and destitution. You could be plunged into a life of poverty, which you yourself may have caused. If you are not aware of it yet, you should see whether or not you are spending way more money than bringing into the family, or else you may end up not being able to afford even your own bare necessities. Having a dream about encountering a white mouse signifies a backstabbing incident. Someone may have allowed access to your most well-guarded secrets could become your worst enemy by revealing to others the very things you have told them and wanted to keep private. For all you know, there are people who could give up a friendship or more than willing to do so, an act of treachery, if it means satisfying their selfish motives and gaining unfair advantage over someone in the process. Wow. And this, there's one last entry on this website. Again, this is all under the category. It's literally labeled at the top of the screen, Minnie Mouse. Seeing yourself eating or devouring a mouse like a raving cannibal in a dream, as if you were assuming the role of a predator, symbolizes an opposite situation where you could be the one falling prey to danger in waking life. You are hereby warned to refrain from going to places which could become scenes of horrible accidents and mishaps.
Oh my God.
Or hanging out with people who might cause you bodily harm or cost you your own life. This is tellmemydream.com. This was the first Google result of Minnie Mouse dream meeting.
That's horrifying. I don't know what to say. I am horrified. I can't believe it actually said like a cannibal.
Like a raving cannibal, Celeste. A raving cannibal.
To be fair, would it be a raving cannibal if you, a human being, were eating a mouse? Doesn't cannibalism imply eating like a human being?
Well, in this case, I think it's implying you are Minnie Mouse eating another mouse.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry I missed that.
Like a raving cannibal.
Important subtext. Jesus.
This is funny. So this is just a classic example of dream dictionaries online maybe not being the best. The next result down is dreamencyclopedia.com, which says, Minnie is a modern feminine archetype. Demure and sweet, she stereotypically expresses the receptive side of the female gender. So also a very unhelpful definition here, I would argue as well, in a very different way. I kind of prefer the raving cannibal one, but...
I mean, I like the phrase raving cannibal very much indeed. I'm quite fond of that.
But you weren't eating Minnie Mouse, though. You were just, Minnie Mouse was just present.
Do we need to bring it back to anything important?
No, I think that was a fun group exercise that we just did on dream dictionaries and practice.
I did enjoy that. I enjoyed that very much. Yeah. Oh, I will. You know what? I'll tell this one tiny little anecdote, which it was part of like a more serious dream, but it was just very funny, and it has engendered a entire in-joke in my Discord server now. Some months ago now, about someone who I was aggressively crushing on at the time, and in the context of this dream, I was with this person at some sort of like family function, like it was like his family function, and all his family members were there. And we were like sitting at a long trestle table, like outside under the sky, you know, it was like an outdoor fancy event. And at some point, like he and I weren't sitting close to each other. Like we weren't like a thing in the dream, but there was a relationship, but we weren't like official or whatever. But his mom was there. And at some point she pulled me aside and just like leaned in real close and was like, "You have to go inside and get the toothpicks." And I was like, "What?" And she was like, "You have to go get the toothpicks. That's what a good wife would do, is she would go and get the toothpicks." And I was like, "Oh, fuck." So like I went inside this house and I was doing my damnedest to locate all of the toothpicks possible in the kitchen of this house. And I don't know that I succeeded, to be honest. I think it was actually very hard to find toothpicks in the room of this house, but I just remember that was the quest. You know, this person's mom had basically said to me, "You want to be worthy to be a wife to this human being, you have to find the toothpicks. That's how we know." And so it has engendered the in-joke now in the Discord server of toothpick wife. Are you the toothpick wife or are you not the toothpick wife? Like, what kind of wife are you? Toothpick wife. It turns out I was not the toothpick wife, neither in the dream nor in real life, but toothpick wife. We should look it up. We should see if dreamdictionary.com has anything to say about toothpicks.
Let's see. Toothpicks. The final search.
Are they about matrimony in any way?
Toothpicks, Dream Dictionary, interpret now at antiflow.com.
Perfect.
Toothpick. Oh, this is a galactic. It's like a, I can't even explain this, what I'm looking at. So I'm going to send you a picture. This is like a full banner of an image that's edited. It's like of a, let's say you're at like a wedding and they're passing hors d'oeuvres. It's like a picture of like scallops wrapped in bacon with toothpicks in it. But they put like a pink galactic celestial filter over the top. And it's massive on the screen. And it, with toothpicks in like size 72 font. But that's what I'm looking at. And it says uncover hidden dream meanings. Okay, so it says, in your dreams you may have, and these are bullet points, seen toothpicks, used the toothpicks, using toothpicks while with friends, toothpicks used in supporting falling teeth.
Oh.
Positive changes are afoot if, bullet point, seen toothpick.
Oh.
You were able to counter the message of using toothpicks by helping a failing friend, using toothpick to ease out teeth cavities. Dreaming of toothpicks reflects your attitude and manner of handling problems that come along your way. Seeing toothpicks in a dream symbolizes that you will be facing problems that does not necessarily need great attention.
Mm.
These are small flaws in life that will eventually be resolved. If you have this dream of seeing toothpick, means that you have the attitude of dwelling too much on little problems that need not to get worried of. That's the theme. That also came up in, what was it? What did we look at? Minnie Mouse?
Minnie Mouse,
yeah.
In fairness, that seems right for that dream, particularly. Toothpick wife was basically like, you should probably not be worried about this person that you're worried about because that's ridiculous. So in fairness, it's not, you know, look, I'm sorry that I can't meet the comedy genius of a fetal horse rolling down a hill. Okay? I am sorry that I can't cap Googling a Glock in my dreams.
I just feel like that just goes to show how I think the reason why I am not so much of a dream diviner is because the second I'm met with any sense of like confusion in my dreams, I'm always like, that doesn't make sense.
Come to my dream class. We'll learn how to fight dream demons, maybe.
All right. When is it dropping? All of the vitals, please.
Yeah, the vitals. So you can keep up with me and my general goings on and the chaos of my life on Instagram mostly. That's at Celeste Mott with two T's, M-O-T-T. You can find my dream course on my website. The website is CelesteMott, M-O-T-T.com. And the dream course is available at CelesteMott.com/shop. So just type in that URL. You can navigate to it from the main site. There's only two things in the shop and only one of them is available for purchase, and that is the dream course. It is on pre-sale right now, so if you buy it, depending on when this episode drops, if you buy it immediately, you will have to wait until it formally drops. But it's due to drop at the very end of the month, so you shouldn't have to wait too long. But there's a pre-sale price, so if you get it before it officially drops, you get it for a discount. But once it drops on the 31st, you will have it. It'll be there for always, forever, forever and ever. And you can download it and watch it to your heart's content. There's no expiration. You don't have to be on a Zoom call. You don't have to be available at any particular time. It's just there for you when you need it. You can also book a consult with me if you would just like to talk to me about your own dream practice, or if you would like a divination done, if you would like me to do any kind of like spiritual consultation or mediumship work for you. Those are all things that I do, and you can book that at CelesteMott.com as well. And I have a Patreon where you can find me, and we have a fun little group of people who do all sorts of fun, magical, spiritual experiments and fun things together. And we're just a good old supportive group of nice folks who keep things drama-free and delightful and talk about weird stuff. So if that sounds like you, you may enjoy that also.
It does sound like me. I do enjoy those things.
You're in there. You enjoy it also.
I am in there. I know. I appear once in a blue moon, typically only in the fitness chat.
Once in a while in the health and wellness channel, you will pop up. Very rarely you will be a guest appearance on some of our psychic questing sessions, which is always fun. So, yeah. But yeah, that's it, right? There's nothing else that I need to tell people about where to find me or what to do. I think that's all. Yeah.
I think that's it. I will have all of those linked in the description box below. And if you would like to find me, you can find me at my website, which is mothmana.com. You can find links there to social media and other things that I'm up to, including readings and things like that. So thank you again, Celeste. I'm sorry. Thank you again, Jake Gyllenhaal. Or sorry, again, I messed up. I'm really fucking up right now. Thank you again, UFC Jake Gyllenhaal, for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to be here today.
You're welcome. I do have a busy, busy schedule of kicking ass and taking names, sometimes both at the same time. So I appreciate you making time for me to be here. And I appreciate your continued indulgence. Everyone should know that I am saved now in Mana's phone as UFC Jake Gyllenhaal. And so whenever they are trying to find me to send me a text, there is a moment of disconnect when they're like, wait, why can't I find my friend in the phone? And it's
no, I have to look up. I have to look up Jake, and it's just riskier this way. I'm actually going to have to probably change it soon, because whenever I'm going to send messages or whatever, I look up Jake and there's like multiple Jakes.
It's fine. I'm sensing the psychic cord between myself and UFC Jake Gyllenhaal beginning to dwindle. So it is time that he left my body and moved on anyway. Good. So, good. You know.
Yeah, I genuinely have zero interest in meeting Jake Gyllenhaal in real life. But
neither do I. And people don't seem to understand. My fitness coach, my health and wellness coach, Kim, came upon a Twitter thread that Mana and I were talking about UFC Jake Gyllenhaal, and they were very concerned. They were like, what's wrong with you? I'm concerned about your preoccupation with bodybuilding men. You need to stop. And I was like, no, it's a joke. Oh, God. It's not real. Ah! Anyway, but Jake, if you are listening to this, love your work. I think. I loved Donnie Darko. That's about it. But I hope you're well.
Okay, I'm gonna end this now. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.